Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to Season 2, Episode 3 of They Walk Among Us, a podcast dedicated to UK true crime. Listener caution is advised, as this episode contains adult themes and descriptions that some listeners may find distressing. Over 10 days in 2013, Joanna Dennehy went on a sadistic killing spree. She murdered three men and left two others fighting for their lives. Joanne Dennehy, or Joanna, she is more commonly known, was born in Harpingdon, Hertfordshire. Her father, Kevin Dennehy, a security guard, and mother, Kathleen, a shop manager, had two children. Their first daughter, Joanna, was born in August 1982, and the second, Maria, followed 2 years later. The sisters had a strong bond during childhood. They shared a bed and even made up their own secret language. Kathleen says her daughter Joanna was a sweet and compassionate child, and if she accidentally stepped on an insect or worm, she would be distraught. Her early years at school were happy and unremarkable. She was intelligent, had good grades, and was always polite. Her parents had high expectations for their daughter's future, hoping she would become a lawyer after attending university. They even paid for some extra tuition to help her with her studies. It was only when she entered her teens that her personality started to change. Playing truant from school was a regular occurrence, and she often found herself in trouble with the police. By the time Joanna was 14 years old, her parents found her to be uncontrollable, and she started a relationship with a man 6 years her senior. Her mother and father didn't like her new boyfriend and were concerned she wouldn't finish school. They pleaded with her to continue her education, but their repeated requests fell on deaf ears. Joanna left home at 15 to live with her boyfriend, John Traynor. Kathleen hoped her daughter would get this rebellious streak out of her system and then she would return home, but it wasn't meant to be. 17, Joanna and John had their first child. John recalls Joanna was devastated when she found out she was pregnant. He explained, "She never wanted the kids. She always said she wanted it to just be me and her. We took a photo of her holding the baby. You could see in her face she was not interested." Joanna started to drink heavily and began to harm herself with a razor blade. She tattooed a star on her right cheek and told her parents they would have to pay to see their granddaughter. The tipping point for John came when the daughter was three. A very drunken Joanna barged past the little girl, almost knocking her down the stairs. John left with his daughter and went to live with his mother, but reconciled with Joanna 18 months later. She had managed to stop drinking, and the couple tried to pick up where they left off. 3 years later, after their second daughter was born, Joanna's drinking habits once again spiraled out of control. John claimed she started drinking strong lager for breakfast and said, "I tried everything to get her off booze and drugs and show her what she had sitting right in front of her, but she wouldn't even give the baby a cuddle or a kiss." Leaving home for days or weeks at a time, she would then return to John and her daughters begging for forgiveness. John said Joanna cheated on him with both men and women, and she was verbally and physically abusive towards him after she had been drinking. The final straw came when Joanna returned home one evening with a knife concealed in her boot. She told John she felt like she could kill someone. Fearing for his family's safety, John left Joanna for good in 2009 and took the children with him. Joanna moved between a number of different properties in East Anglia, and about this time her sister Maria returned from serving in Afghanistan. After a tour of Helmand in the army, Maria tried to contact her sister, but Joanna made it clear she had no interest in having a relationship with her or any of her family. Joanna turned to petty crime and prostitution and served a short sentence for carrying a blade in a public place. In 2012, she had further brushes with the law, first receiving a community service order before being sentenced to 14 weeks in Peterborough Prison for theft. A community service order can be imposed instead of a custodial prison sentence, with the offender often carrying out unpaid work in the community. A short stint in prison meant her mental health was assessed. Joanna was diagnosed with psychopathic antisocial personality disorder, which manifests itself in anger, aggression, impulsivity, and irresponsibility. Letting agent Kevin Lee owned a business called Quick Let, which rented homes to homeless and vulnerable people. Most of his properties were in the Orton Greyhay area of Peterborough, just over 3 miles from the centre of town. The local authorities would recommend Quick Let to people who are in urgent need of housing but couldn't afford a standard rental or had poor credit history. Kevin Lee met Joanna Dennehy through Quick Let when she was released from prison and she needed somewhere to stay. She told Kevin that she had just served 8 years inside for murdering her father because he raped her. The truth was, she had served just 14 weeks in prison for theft. She added to her fictional past by saying she had also burnt 2 people in a house fire and ran over 2 more in a car. Kevin Lee found no reason to doubt her story, as many ex-convicts stayed in his properties. He told his wife Christina that he just wanted to help her. He also saw the potential in having Joanna and her friend Gary Stretch, who was 7'3", on his side to keep his other tenants in line or threaten those tenants who didn't pay their rent. The 47-year-old friend of Joanna's, formerly known as Gary Richards, was a father to 3 children and had changed his name by deed-poll in recognition of his stature as he suffered from gigantism. He had spent a considerable amount of time behind bars for burglary, though despite his size, was seen as a gentle giant by those that knew him. On March 29, 2013, Kevin arranged to meet Joanna at one of his rental properties. Despite being married, the police later uncovered that Kevin Lee was infatuated with Joanna and the pair had a sexual relationship. Kevin would let Joanna stay in a room rent-free, gave Joanna money to purchase a car, as well as buying her countless other gifts. He had met up with his best friend Dave Church an hour before going to see her. He told Dave that Joanna planned to dress him up and rape him. It wasn't the first time that Kevin Lee had described the extreme sexual activity that he and Joanna took part in, so Dave had no reason to be concerned. Kevin didn't return home that night, and his wife felt there was something wrong, as it was highly unusual for Kevin to stay out all night. His phone was switched off, and his wife spent a stressful night waiting up before reporting his disappearance to the police the next day. On the morning of March 30th, Martin Brunning, Detective Chief Inspector of the Major Crime Unit, arrived at his office. He received a rundown of all the active cases that were new that day. When he saw the disappearance of Kevin Lee, for some reason, maybe instinct, he felt it wasn't going to end well. He was right. Later that same day, Kevin's Ford Mondeo car was found burnt out in a field. Kevin's wife, Christina, knew this wasn't good news, and she didn't have to wait more than 24 hours before police contacted her again, explaining a body had been discovered in a ditch near the A16 road at Newborough. The body had been staged in a humiliating position and dressed in a black sequin dress which had been pulled up above the man's waist, exposing his buttocks. Tears in the fabric correlated with 5 stab wounds to the chest. The blade had been plunged so deep they penetrated the victim's lungs and heart. The spot where the body was discovered wasn't visible from the road. No CCTV operated in the area, and due to the isolated location, the prospect of any witnesses was unlikely. Once investigators were able to establish the body was that of Kevin Lee, they felt the best place to start was looking into his private life. Joanna Dennehy was under suspicion fairly quickly when Kevin's wife Christina was trying to find out where her husband was, so called the contacts on his phone. One of the numbers was Joanna's. The call placed her in the same area where the Ford Mondeo was found, so police went to pay Joanna a visit at her home. She wasn't there, but what police found was chilling. A blood-soaked mattress had been dumped, leant against a wall in the back garden. Forensic testing was carried out on the blood as a matter of urgency, and police were almost sure it would be a match for Kevin Lee. To their surprise, the results came back without it being a match, though the discovery ignited fears for another one of Joanna's associates. John Chapman, another Quick lieutenant and a Royal Navy veteran, had also gone missing. It was paramount that Joanna and her friend Gary Stretch were found as quickly as possible. In an unusual move by authorities, they notified the press. Police were hopeful that the pair would be apprehended quickly, as their distinctive looks would make them stand out to members of the public. At 7'3" tall, Gary was easily recognisable, and the slim Joanna had a tattoo of a star underneath her eye. An officer in Norfolk saw the police report and identified the suspects. He had been called to a petrol station earlier, where a couple had driven off without paying. The occupants of the car had pulled up at the petrol station and the female passenger went inside. CCTV footage shows Joanna Dennehy filling up a basket with biscuits and crisps. Relaxed, with a slight smile on her face, she left without paying for the goods and the couple drove off. Peterborough Police ran the license plate through the automatic number plate recognition database, which made it possible to track the vehicle via traffic cameras on the motorway. The police didn't have to wait for long until the car was picked up, with the couple heading southwest on the M5 motorway. The pair were spotted on camera at a motorway service station. They walked in holding hands, and minutes later footage showed Joanna pacing outside the bathroom. While on the run, they committed crimes to sustain themselves, stealing food and other items they desired. They picked up a camera and used it to take photographs of each other. When the photographs were later discovered, they appeared to be a series of jovial tourist-like pictures of two people visiting attractions on a road trip. As the couple ran short of funds, they decided to sell some of the items they obtained in their robberies. They once again hit the road, this time to visit an old acquaintance of Gary's in Kingstone, Herefordshire. Mark Lloyd, a former petty thief, had crossed paths with Gary Stretch in prison. He hadn't met Joanna before, and he wasn't aware of what was going on in the news, so welcomed them into his home. He quickly realised his hospitality was a huge mistake. After entering his front room, he saw the table was covered in stolen items, computer tablets, cameras, and mobile phones. Joanna looked at Mark, produced a knife, and stated she had killed 3 people already and wanted to kill more. Despite Gary Stretch's size, it was evident he was intimidated by Joanna. Seeing this, it was apparent to Mark that if he valued his life, he had to comply. Joanna told Mark he would be accompanying her to Hereford to sell the electronics to one of his contacts. Mark described the 45-minute drive from Kingstone to Hereford as horrific. She was drinking whiskey and getting increasingly aggressive. He recounted that she kept showing him the knife and ordering Gary to drive slowly. She randomly requested stops to take more bizarre tourist photographs, some of which she insisted Mark posed in. They needed cigarettes, so they stopped at a small local shop. Joanna entered the shop with Mark while Gary waited in the car. CCTV footage shows Mark entering with Joanna directly behind him. At the counter, it appears as though she gives Mark a quick bear hug from behind, when in reality she was making him aware she still had a knife. She told him to just buy cigarettes. At that moment, the till opened, and Mark was sure she was going to leap over the counter and steal the money. He was relieved when she oddly started flirting with the cashier, but her mood darkened the second she got back in the car. While holding the same knife she used to murder Kevin Lee, she discussed with Gary finding a random person to stab. Joanna told him she wanted her fun now, but no women or children. Gary obliged straight away, pointing out of the car window to a man walking his dog, and said, "Will he do?" The man Gary had chosen was Robin Bereza, a 63-year-old retired firefighter. Robin survived and recounted the details of the senseless attack in court. After a car had pulled up alongside him, Robin explained, "I felt a blow to my right shoulder. I turned around and saw this lady. She just stared straight through me." Robin, who was shaking as he gave evidence in court, described coming face to face with a woman intent on killing him. "I saw the lady with that thing in her hands. I didn't know what it was," he said. "I got worried, then frightened. I said, 'What are you doing?' She said, 'I'm hurting you. I'm going to fucking kill you.' He said, 'I kicked her and made contact. It had no impact on her. She just came straight towards me. I ran into the road, put my hand in my jacket and saw all this blood. She tried to come for me again. I kicked her again. She still didn't react." The assault on Robin Bereza abruptly ended when Gary Stretch wildly gestured to Joanna to return to the car before speeding off. The attack was carried out in a public place at 3 p.m. in broad daylight. Joanna's lust for blood hadn't been sated and she wanted another victim. Driving around for about 5 minutes, Gary pointed out another man walking his dog, 56-year-old John Rogers. He also survived his ordeal and lived to tell the jury in court about the horrific attack. He described walking on a cycle path when he felt a sudden punch to his back, which was Joanna's first knife blow. He told the court, "I turned around and saw the woman who stabbed me just standing there. She started stabbing me in the chest." He asked Joanna, "What's this all about?" And she commented that he was bleeding, adding, "I better do some more." John Rogers said he fell to the ground, but the attack continued as he drifted in and out of consciousness. "As I lay there, I thought, this is where I'm going to die," he said. John was stabbed 40 times before he was discovered by passers-by and was rushed via air ambulance to a hospital for life-saving surgery. John spoke to the press in 2014.
"I was walking the dog towards a cycle path just down there. I turn right onto the cycle path, which slopes initially when you get on it, and I suddenly felt what I thought was a really heavy punch in the small of my back. And then I turned round. I thought it was probably one of my mates or neighbours messing about, you know. And when I turned round, I saw this woman, and she just kept stabbing me in the chest. And I got the dog with me. And because it slopes down and the force of the blows, I was being pushed backwards all the time. So I let the dog go, thinking that he would run off, but he didn't. And then I fell backwards onto a grass verge, which is just by the cycle path. She said something to the effect of, my boyfriend told me to do this. And she also said, "Oh, look, you're bleeding. I'd better do some more." And I think I said, "Just leave me alone, please. Please leave me alone." But she didn't. She just carried on. Well, I couldn't really see much of her face, but she was very kind of, like I said in court, very sort of matter of fact about it all. You know, she didn't appear to be showing any emotion whatsoever, really. And then when it did finally stop, I just thought, well, this is it. I'm going to die. Because there was loads and loads of blood. I'd like to praise the air ambulance crew that took me to the QE in Birmingham, and also to all the consultant surgeons, the nurses. I was in intensive care for about 5 days, and they were just absolutely fantastic. It's changed my outlook a little bit in that, you know, I think you got to make everything of every day, because you don't know. You could wake up in the morning and get run down by a bus, you know. You don't know what's around the corner. So I try to make the best of every day.
Mark Lloyd witnessed both stabbings from the back seat of the car. He had thought Robin Bereza was dead, and he was almost certain the second victim, John Rogers, would be after such a ferocious attack. Joanna skipped back to the car with John's dog, got in the passenger seat, and told Gary, "That was nice. I need to do some more." As the car pulled away, Mark saw the second victim miraculously raise himself to his hands and knees. It later transpired that John Rogers managed to crawl 100 yards to a footpath where he was discovered by a passerby. Mark Lloyd feared for his life as he could hear police sirens closing in from every side. He was convinced Joanna would get panicked and turn the knife on him. The car came to a stop, and they were now surrounded by police officers. Still holding the murder weapon and showing no sign of emotion, Joanna Dennehy and her accomplices were finally arrested.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
By the time Joanna was being checked in at the police station, she was jovial with an officer behind the desk, remarking on his strict eyebrows, and voiced her distaste at the regulation suicide prevention suits. She repeated it could be worse many times and tried flirting with the officers. In the footage captured at the police station, Joanna can be seen smiling, enjoying the attention.
Wrap them around the twine. Am I still sorry? Am I cheering now?
Yes.
Good. good. We like cheery, Joanne.
Yeah.
Even though I am strict.
Would you be cheery if you were up for attempted murder and murder?
I wouldn't, but...
No, but I was just smiling. So please don't put me in a suicide zone. I don't want to do it. I'm good with my head.
Attempted
murder and murder.
You've been arrested on suspicion of attempted murder and murder.
So going down for Sunday Rose?
Yes.
What do you want to drink?
Her parents were contacted, and this was the first time they knew of Joanna's whereabouts in 10 years. Police informed them that Joanna had been involved in a serious crime. They were devastated by the news, and later when they watched the footage of their daughter being booked in, they barely recognised her. The day after Joanna's arrest, the chief investigator, Martin Brunning, received a call telling him that a body of a male had been discovered northeast of Peterborough at Thorny Dyke. He believed the body was that of John Chapman, who shared a property with Joanna where police had previously found the blood-soaked mattress. Detective Chief Inspector Brunning put the phone down, and almost immediately it rang again. The voice on the line inquired, "Have you heard about the body found in Thorny Dyke?" Brunning replied, "Yes, I've just taken a call." The operator responded, "There are two bodies in the ditch." The first of the two bodies to be identified, as suspected, was John Chapman. Though John was a heavy drinker, people were fond of him, and he was well known in the neighbourhood. John Chapman knew Joanna well, and it was speculated while they were sharing a house, a dispute broke out, and she attacked him while he laid in bed, stabbing him repeatedly in the chest. Afterwards, the blood-soaked mattress was disposed of in the garden until it was discovered by police, who had come looking to question Joanna in relation to the murder of Kevin Lee a couple of days later. The second body found was identified as Łukasz Slabaszewski, a 31-year-old Polish national. CCTV footage was unearthed showing his final known movements on March 19, 2013. He retrieved money from a cash point, then headed in the direction of Joanna's home. Łukasz was hoping to have sex with Joanna after they had a session of drinking and taking drugs. It's not known if Joanna had attacked him with a pocket knife as he arrived or when he was about to leave. Due to the amount of evidence obtained from the bathroom, it is thought this is where he lost his life. Blood splatter found in the living room indicated Łukasz suffered a prolonged attack, as deep knife wounds had penetrated his heart and chest. He had disappeared at least 10 days before John Chapman, and Łukasz was found to be Joanna's first murder victim. A couple of days after his death, she showed a 14-year-old girl his body, which had been callously stuffed into a wheelie bin not far from her home. Despite this, during a number of police interviews across a total of 14 hours, Joanna refused to answer any questions relating to the murders.
Did you murder Łukasz Slabaszewski?
No comment.
Did you murder Kevin Lee?
No comment.
Did you murder John Chapman?
No comment.
Evidence mounted against her, and a psychological assessment was carried out by a consultant forensic psychiatrist, Dr. Frank Farnham. In addition to a previous diagnosis of psychopathic antisocial personality disorder, Dr. Farnham concluded that Joanna also has paraphilia, sadomasochism. People with the condition experience sexual excitement from acts involving the infliction of pain, humiliation or bondage. A pre-trial hearing was arranged for November 18, 2013 at the Old Bailey in London. At the beginning of what the legal system thought would be a long battle, only 10 minutes into the hearing, after being read the indictments for the murders of Łukasz Slabaszewski, John Chapman and Kevin Lee and the two attempted murders of Robin Bereza and John Rogers, Joanna stood up and pled guilty. Detective Chief Inspector Brunning and Joanna's mother were stunned. Joanna craved attention and notoriety, so they were sure she was going to drag out the court case as long as possible to stay in the limelight. 3 months after a guilty plea, she returned to the Old Bailey to be sentenced. In the sentencing remarks, the judge, Mr. Justice Spencer, said, "Joanne Dennehy, within the space of 10 days at the end of March last year, you murdered 3 men in cold blood. Although you pleaded guilty, you have made it quite clear that you have no remorse for those murders. With the help of one or more of your co-defendants, you dumped the bodies of your 3 victims in the remote rural areas around Peterborough, hoping they would not be found. Only a matter of days later, you attempted to murder 2 more men, this time openly on the streets of Hereford. Victims chosen entirely at random, miraculously they survived. You claim to feel remorse for stabbing those 2 men nearly to death. I have no hesitation in rejecting that suggestion. You are a cruel, calculating, selfish, and manipulative serial killer." Joanna smirked and mumbled when the judge handed down the sentence. "Joanne Dennehy, for these 3 cruel and brutal murders, I sentence you to life imprisonment, and the term you will serve is a whole life order. That reflects the seriousness not only of the 3 murders, but also the 2 attempted murders and the 3 offences of preventing the lawful burial of the bodies of your 3 victims." Joanna is the 3rd woman in the UK to be sentenced to life in prison. The first was Myra Hindley, and the 2nd, Rose West. Gary Stretch wasn't Joanna's only accomplice being sentenced. 2 men, Leslie Layton and Robert Moore, were found to have assisted in the disposal of the 3 victims' bodies. Leslie Layton had taken a morbid souvenir, a photograph of the body of John Chapman, the morning after he was stabbed to death. Later that evening, he helped dispose of his corpse in the ditch at Thorny Dyke and assisted Joanna and Gary with attempting to clean up the crime scenes after the murders of John Chapman and Kevin Lee. Leslie Layton was also captured on CCTV, purchasing the petrol canister used to set Kevin Lee's car on fire. He claimed that he didn't leave the vehicle when Gary Stretch was disposing of the bodies. Leslie Layton was charged with perverting the course of justice, received 14 years in prison. Robert Moore had given Gary and Joanna a place to stay for 2 nights. He was fully aware the couple were wanted for murder. Robert Moore was also charged with perverting the course of justice and was handed a sentence of 3 years. No charges were brought against Mark Lloyd. For his part in the crimes, Gary Stretch was charged with 3 counts of preventing the lawful burial of a body. In addition, he was also charged with 2 attempted murders of Robin Bereza and John Rogers. The judge explained his reasoning behind Gary's sentence. "Gary Stretch, for each of the offences of attempted murder, the sentence is life imprisonment. You will serve a minimum term of 19 years, that being one half of the determinant sentence which would otherwise have been appropriate. The effect of this sentence is that you will serve 19 years in prison before you are even eligible to be considered for parole. It will then be a matter for the parole board to decide if and when it's safe to release you, and if you are released, you will remain on license for the rest of your life." So where are we now? The families of Lukasz Slabozewski, John Chapman and Kevin Lee have been profoundly affected by the cruel murders of their loved ones. Lukasz's family released a statement to the press. "The sad news about Lukasz's death shocked us all, as no one had ever thought such a tragic event would happen to our family. The last time he had visited us was in December. He was really thrilled with his new job. The last time he contacted us was in March, and his plans were to spend Easter with his sisters in London. Lukasz was a sensitive person and was always eager to help others. Not only was he friendly to everyone, he always made everyone laugh. Our life will not be the same without him, and we will truly miss him. We would all like to thank Cambridgeshire Police and the detectives that were involved for all their hard work and the amount of effort that has been put into this case." Joanna's 2nd victim, John Chapman, was described in court as a kindly, harmless and inoffensive man who had served his country in the Royal Navy but had fallen on hard times through his weakness for alcohol. Darren Cray, brother-in-law to Joanna's 3rd victim, Kevin Lee, spoke about his family's loss outside the court.
as we try to come to terms with what has happened to Kevin. Nothing is the same now. This tragedy has shaken our lives to the core, and we are devastated about how Kevin's life came to an end. Christina married Kevin in 1996. Kevin was Christina's first relationship, and she is devastated that Kevin has been taken away from us as a family. Initially, after discovering the circumstances of Kevin's death, she felt a lot of anger, but is slowly managing to deal with that. As a family, we feel an immense pressure to fill so many voids which no one could ever really replace. Kevin was so full of life, excitement and laughter, that life is now very dull without him around. He was headstrong, intelligent, unique, and his charisma ensured that everyone he ever met would never forget him. A true one-off. We live every day with a devastating effect that this has had on our family. Joanna Dennehy has taken over our lives and has callously created a hole that cannot be filled. She tried to humiliate Kevin in a way that wasn't deserved. Kevin gave everyone a chance, no matter how vulnerable, which sadly led to him losing his life. I'm sure all of those people he helped will remember how much he helped them. His friends and family were absolutely blessed to know the true person he was, and will remember him always and miss him each day.
Robin Bereza, the first of the surviving victims, recovered from the attack but suffered more anguish when he had to look at the photographs of his injuries in court. John Rogers, who was the last of Joanna's victims, managed to survive being stabbed, though sadly John passed away 1 year after the attack. His cause of death is not thought to be linked to the assault. Some newspapers claimed that Gary Stretch had sent 5 love letters to Joanna while they were waiting to be sentenced. One of the letters read, "You can always count on me no matter what, my devil in the flesh. I just wish I'd got the chance to really show you how much I loved you. I'm sad I never got the chance to make love to you, babe. I'm one of those men that didn't just want to fuck you since day one. Making love to you was my dream, and it will always be my dream, never to come true." Gary went on to add, "My legal team think I will get straight sentence of around 12 to 18 years. Okay, Angel, I offer now. Hope to hear from you really soon. Always yours. Hugs and kisses from me to you. Love you. Love baby boy." An extract from the end of another letter read, "I love you, Joanne. Your personal undertaker." It is claimed that Joanna sent the letters to Gary Stretch's ex-partner, Julie Gibbons. Joanna said they proved Gary was not afraid of her. Joanna Dennehy's family want no further contact with her. Maria, her sister, spoke to the press in February 2014.
I could never picture in my own head that she was capable of doing something so monstrous, I suppose. I don't think they had a lot in life, my parents, when they were growing up. So they made sure that me and Joanna had everything that they never had, like opportunities and stuff like that. So that's why they worked so much to give us everything. There was a girl that we loved and then turned into a monster. I don't think you can actually describe it any other way. And to be honest, I don't think I'd want to understand how a human being was capable of doing so much damage. And I hope that she never sees daylight again, ever. I'm just sorry. Sorry for what she's done. I have no right to talk to the victims' families. And I wish in a different life they'd understand the sorrow that my parents are going through for them.
John Traynor, Joanna's ex-partner and father of her 2 children, spoke about how he thought her sentence was not enough.
She's going to be top dog. She's going to rule the roost. She's not an idiot. She knows what she's done. That's not going to be punishment, sending her to prison for the rest of her natural life, is it? Because she's not bothered.
So what would be appropriate?
I can't answer that. I just think an eye for an eye, that's what I would say.
What, if there was a death penalty?
Possibly. An eye for an eye. But you can't murder 3 Joes, can you, and attempt to murder her twice more?
It's the mother of your kids as well.
I think I still stand by it.
Joanna has been serving her sentence in HMP Bronzefield near Ashford in Surrey since 2014. In 2016, she was placed in solitary confinement after details of an escape plan were found in her cell. The plan, which listed two accomplices, described in detail how Joanna was going to kill a female guard, steal her keys, and sever her fingers to unlock the biometric security system. Joanna filed a High Court damages claim and cited human rights violations for being kept in solitary confinement. Joanna's defence, Hugh Southey QC, argued that her incarceration violated her human rights, and being in isolation for such a long period had taken a heavy toll, leaving her tearful and upset. He described his client as a vulnerable inmate due to a history of severe personality disorders. To further support his client, Hugh Southey said Joanna insisted that the alleged plot was nothing more than a doodle found in her diary. Jenny Richards QC acted on behalf of HMP Bronzefield. She described Joanna Dennehy as arguably the most dangerous female prisoner in custody that had a taste for killing and had admitted to a psychiatrist that she was sadistic. Mr. Justice Singh ruled her segregation since September 2015 had been in accordance with law and at all material times had been necessary and proportionate. Joanna was denied compensation. Thank you for listening, and special thanks to our Patreon supporters. More information can be found on our website at theywalkamonguspodcast.com. Our podcast recommendation for this week is Court Junkie. It's a show we've mentioned here before, and we're massive fans, so we highly recommend that you check it out. Host Gillian delves into court documents, attends trials, and interviews those close to the case to shine a light on the injustices of the American judicial system. Please stick around for a trailer at the end of this podcast. If you would like to support They Walk Among Us and receive early access to ad-free episodes along with other extras, just head to patreon.com/theywalkamongus. You can follow us on Twitter at TWAU_podcast or follow us on Instagram and Facebook under They Walk Among Us Podcast.
Imagine being accused of a horrible crime that you know you didn't commit. That's in episode one. Imagine your child's killer is still on the loose, but the authorities keep saying they don't suspect foul play. That's in episode four. Or imagine that you've spent 17 years in prison, only to then be fully exonerated due to advances in science. That's episode 10. My name is Jillian, and my podcast is Court Junkie, where I cover criminal trials and court cases and conduct interviews with those close to the case. Check out Court Junkie, available now, everywhere you listen to podcasts.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.